I got pregnant as a teenager. It was just like robbing Peter to pay Paul. I couldn't do that, and I didn't want my child to go through that. I had to find a way. So my first endeavor was actually a child care center, because I saw that child care cost so much it was taking my whole paycheck. So I turned it into a business where I could help other people make money and not have to pay for child care for my daughter. In the beginning, I think a lot of us try to be solopreneurs. That's why you're stressed. That's why you're frustrated. When I was in corporate America trying to work for other people, I did notice that sometimes they don't care about you as an individual. You're just like a machine. Sometimes they get in relationships because of the money, and they're stuck in toxic relationships. So sometimes I feel like, women, if we have some sort of independence, that way you won't get stuck in some of these toxic relationships just for money.
I tried something, it didn't work out, it failed, now I'm gonna try something again, you know? And I think a lot of times in business, we have this like pride, but we also have this like shame and guilt.
Ghetto. Good idea, now we buy merch.
Girl, that's ghetto.
Payment miss.
Ooh, the ghetto.
Say she quit.
Ooh, the ghetto.
Late on your rent.
Rent is ghetto.
New event.
Ooh, the ghetto.
Invoice in.
That ain't ghetto.
Money spent.
Oh, that's ghetto. Have you been completely isolating yourself in business? Like, you don't have people that you could do this business with? Well, you need coworkers, and that is why we created the Entrepreneurs Coworkers Community. This allows you to be able to develop relationships with other people in your community. So in the Entrepreneurship Coworkers Community, we give you a quiz to find out who you are and what type of CEO you are. And in this quiz, you get to meet other CEOs that may be more creative or traditional or hybrid. We have these CEOs there for you. But even taking it up a notch, we have local chapters in your city, from Atlanta to Dallas to New York to Houston to Chicago, chapters in your city where we're actually linking up every single month to work together, linking up to go to brunch together, having fun together, doing community service outreach. Like, this is a section of our life where we can really co-work and mingle with other people. It's time for you to get some coworkers, sis. And this community is completely free. Just because you're watching this podcast, all you have to do is stop, pause the podcast, click the link below, take the assessment, get in the community, and I'll see you there. Bye, coworker. Back to the episode. Welcome back to another episode of the Ghetto CEO Podcast, where we talk about all things being a CEO, because honestly, y'all, being a CEO is giving very much ghetto. A lot of people don't talk about the highs and the lows, the ups and the downs. They only show you the G-Wagons, the diamonds, the furs, and all the things. But being a CEO has a lot of uncovered things, right, that we don't get to talk about. Ain't nobody talking about how everybody sales down 30% this year, right? But here on the Ghetto CEO Podcast, we talk about all the things, okay? And we bring you real CEOs that want to tell you real stories. So listen, make sure you like, comment, and subscribe. Go over there to Apple Podcasts, leave us a review. Let us know in the comments if you keep wanting to see these CEOs, because this job is not paid, okay? I need y'all to let me know if y'all liking what we're doing. But today we got a real CEO on the couch that's going to bring you guys the fire, okay? I want you guys to know that we only bring CEOs that's willing to tell the honest truth. And today we have Miss Sheika on the couch. Welcome, girl.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Yes, I am excited that you are here. So listen, normally on interviews, people tell you, okay, Sheika, introduce yourself, but I got another prompt, okay? How would your mother introduce what you and your business do? What would she say?
My mother would say, I'm that girl. That's what she's starting to say now. She was like, I really see now that you're that girl.
Yes, I love it. And it's so funny because I feel like our parents, family, they never really can describe what we do. They don't know. Right. They just are out here like, you just living it up, okay? Right. But tell them who you are and what you do and what your business is.
I'm Sheika Johnson, a.k.a. High Status. I am High Status Consultant, but I'm also a serial entrepreneur. So I have my hands in several endeavors. But with High Status Consulting, I help women mostly start scale their businesses to six figures, and then we go to seven figures after that.
Okay, I love it. I love it. So you've been on this journey for a while. How long you been doing this?
I've been an entrepreneur for about 21 years.
Okay, okay. So what made you say, okay, yeah, I can't go into this corporate life? Like, entrepreneurship is for me. Like, what made you feel like that?
Well, actually, I was kind of pushed into it.
Okay.
You know, sometimes they say things that happen to us is a blessing in disguise. So I got pregnant as a teenager.
Okay, okay.
And then it was just like robbing Peter to pay Paul. I couldn't do that. And I didn't want my child to go through that. So I had to find a way. So my first endeavor was actually a child care center because I saw that child care cost so much. It was taking my whole paycheck. So I turned it into a business where I could help other people make money and not have to pay for child care for my daughter. So it started there.
Win-win.
Right. It started there.
Okay, so we did the child care center. And what was some of the, do you still own the child care center?
No, I sold it.
Okay, so what made you, and that's the blessing, what made you be like, okay, I started this, but this isn't really like what I want to do long term?
Well, what I've learned over the years, your life happens in like patterns. Mm-hmm. So I don't know about you, but for me, like every so many years, my life takes a turn where it's something else that I need to be doing. Mm-hmm. So that was just for that cycle. Mm-hmm. I did it a little bit once she got in school. So it wasn't just solely for childcare purposes, but it was just after that, I went into healthcare.
Yeah. Okay.
So with that being said, sometimes your family will say, well, you need to do something that's stable. And they say healthcare is not going anywhere. Mm. So I went and did that. I got my nursing license.
Okay.
And I started doing home health.
Gotcha.
So when I got in there, the entrepreneur spirit in me stirred something up. And I was like, I got to get out of here. I just can't do this. So now I have two home healthcare businesses as well.
Okay, okay. So, you still had those
businesses. I still have those.
Okay, okay. Mm-hmm. So with the childcare business, and you said something that was very powerful. You said sometimes, especially in entrepreneurship, there are different seasons. Right. And a lot of times we are like fighting against it. Right. I know there's somebody listening. It's like, oh, girl, I'm in this season right now. Right. But we like fighting against that. We like, no, this is what I know. You know what I'm saying? I know childcare. I've been doing this. Like, what gave you the confidence to lean into it? Or how did you feel? Like, were you comfortable or was it like, I don't know if I should do this?
Well, at first, anything new, you're going to find uncomfortable sometimes, especially if you haven't been born into it, like if it wasn't like a family business or something that you were around.
Yeah.
So a lot of my friends were older than me. They were entrepreneurs as well. So I did have a mentor. Okay. She did childcare, and she helped guide me with that and everything.
Okay, okay, okay. So then you went into the home healthcare business. What were some of the struggles with the transition? And now you still have this business. Any struggles that you started to go through?
Now, in the beginning, I think a lot of us try to be solopreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not good. That's why you're stressed. Mm. That's why you're frustrated. You have to have a team.
Yeah.
So at first I was the team and the boss.
Right.
You can't do that. In order to scale, you have to get a team.
Yeah.
And sometimes we struggle with if we have the right team members worrying about that.
Yeah.
But just be, slow to hire, quick to fire.
Yeah.
If something's wrong, I mean, you don't know what anybody's going to do until they come into there. Just kind of look for signs or whatever. Give them guidance, if it's things that you don't like. Mm-hmm. But once you start seeing it, you have to get rid of them. So now I have a team, a powerful team. Mm-hmm. So I'm not as hands-on with it. I'm just pretty much the owner.
Yeah, I love that. And so as you were building this team, was there any lessons that you started to learn from this process? Because I know when I was building my team, baby, I didn't know I'm my only child. Okay, so I didn't know that all of these people had these emotions and feelings that you had to listen to. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, I pay you, you know?
Right.
So is there any lessons that you feel like you learned along the way while you were building this team?
I did. When I was in corporate America trying to work for other people, I did notice that sometimes they don't care about you as an individual. You're just like a machine being there. So I learned to kind of listen to what they need. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if you fulfill what they need, you get better work performance out of them. Like I listen to what they have going on in their personal life sometimes and kind of see, well, what can we do, to kind of help this or whatever. I care about, like, if their kids having, graduation or something.
Yeah.
We'll do gifts or something for graduation. You just got to kind of be involved, with them as well. So, emotionally, they're kind of stable or they feel like you care about them.
No, absolutely. And I think that's the thing. Because I feel like now, I'm a better leader than I was before, right? And I do think that there is like an evolution that you go through, right? Yes. And especially you said you started as a teen mom. What do you feel like the evolution as a CEO looked like for you?
Well, starting as a teen mom, it definitely don't look the same as it do now.
Yeah.
I see the importance of, like I was saying, taking care of your staff, making sure they're good, listening, being able to know their personalities. If they come in and you can tell something's wrong, you know, having that side conversation with them, sometimes it goes a long way.
Yeah.
You never know what a person's going through, and it does affect their work performance. Just have a listening ear sometimes there. And if it can't be you, like, have somebody on your team that's that type of person that can, you know, supervise a position that can kind of listen sometimes.
You know, that's a good thing that you said, because sometimes we got to know ourselves first, because you got to know if you really not, like, a nice person. You know what I mean? Like, you got to just be like, you know, that's just not my skill that God gave me, you know? And put somebody else in place, because it doesn't alleviate the fact that people still need it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you just got to have the right people in place. All right, y'all. I know y'all are tuning in to this Ghetto CEO podcast episode, but I have to bring y'all a special guest, okay? I want y'all, what you say, buy real estate, don't wait, what you say?
Don't wait to buy real estate.
Uh-huh.
Buy real estate, don't wait.
Yes, listen, tell them about your program that you have.
Yeah, so my program, what I do is I'm a real estate investor. I buy cheap distressed properties out of state, fix them, furnish them, and rent them to travel nurses. Mm. And some of the properties, I rent them on Section 8 because I like to get my money in the first of the month.
Yes.
So what I do is teach people how to do the same. Right now, I have over 500 students, and every day we're closing. You can check my page. Yes. I have so many testimonials. So we buy these properties close to the hospitals. A lot of people think during COVID is when, you know, now that COVID's almost gone, the nurses and the business travelers have gone down. That's not always the case. And some people always think that you have to buy in a big city like Atlanta. I buy in smaller cities because the competition is less, and a lot of people are not doing what I'm doing, so at a bigger scale. So as long as there's a hospital and there's a business center, it's always a great place to start.
I love it. Listen, if y'all are trying to tap in, because literally she talked to me about like how she started at $40,000 and buy a $40,000 home. And you, how much did you put down? Like
$8,000?
$8,000, y'all, literally. And she said one of her students had like a 560 credit score, right? Like, and listen, don't wait. You need real estate, okay? You need to get your real estate. So I need y'all to go over there to her page, tap into her course. The link is below, and make sure you use code Ghetto CEO, okay? Yes. That is one word, Ghetto CEO, and you're going to be able to enjoy this amazing quiz. Now listen, make sure you do the work, okay? Because I want to see the receipts. All right, y'all, now back to the episode. So as you continue to build your team, what point did you get to the point in your career was like, okay, now I want to teach other women to build a this big business like I have built?
Well, once I saw myself scale to seven figures in such a short amount of time, I was like, okay. And then I did it multiple times. So I'm like, okay, it's time to show other people.
Yeah.
You know, empower women. Being that I was a single mom, it's other people in that same position. Sometimes they get in relationships because of the money, and they're stuck in toxic relationships. So sometimes I feel like, you know, women, if we have some sort of independence, that way you won't get stuck in some of these toxic relationships just for money.
You know, and that's a good point, because I always tell people, one, our relationship with money definitely dictates what we accept and what we don't accept to get money. And so how did you develop to be able to teach other women to build wealth? And then you've now seen these multiple seven figures go through your account, come through the account, bills come in, you know, all of these things. How have you been able to develop your relationship with money, and where did it start?
First of all, seeing that in your account for the first time, it's kind of scary, especially if you didn't come from a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's kind of scary. Oh, no, that was a lot.
It's scary because it's like, okay, think about it. You were, what age did you start your childcare business?
I was 19.
19. Okay, so you maybe was making six figures at the time. You probably got to see six figures at your account. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like a 19, 20, 21-year-old, you ain't supposed to, you supposed to be broke in college. You know what I'm saying? Eat ramen noodles. Like, no way you're supposed to have a successful business. And I'm assuming like you ain't come from a wealthy family. So you ain't come from a wealthy family. Like, how did you learn these like principles? Like, was it trial and error? Like, it was just like figuring it out.
It was trial and error because as a teenager, I didn't invest the money the way that I should have. I spent a lot of money because when you don't have it, you spend it because it's things that you want and things that you're able to get, and you know. And then that's another thing. I did sell the business. I didn't know as much as I know now. Mm-hmm. I didn't sell it for as much as I should have.
And, tell us about that.
I sold it to like a company, a person that I know, but he has a company or whatever. And it just, I didn't know the worth of the business. So I just took it. Because as a teenager, you just take whatever. But I actually wasn't a teenager. Okay. I did that for like 7 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you were just, like at your end of your 20s. You finna go into your 30s season. You like, I'm stepping to this new season. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So you like, okay, now hindsight, because I didn't know. And I think also bringing awareness to certain things and exposure breeds clarity. You have never seen anybody sell a business. No. So now that you've been exposed to it, I know how to do it a little bit differently now. But what even gave you the thought, like, oh, I could sell this? Because most people be like, let me just close it down.
Well, I did try to do that at first. And then I, like, kind of stopped operating. But I didn't, like, give up my license. So it was still licensed. Then I reopened for a little bit. And then I was like, okay. But it was my mentor. I told you used to be around a lot of older people, but I didn't go in too much detail with her that I should have. So I feel like if you have mentors, don't try to, you know, not share certain things with them. But I didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I think, speaking on that, like, sometimes in business, we have a lot of pride. You know what I mean? Like, we don't want to. And that's why I love the Ghetto CEO platform, because it ain't about pride over here. We literally, if we have a segment called a Monday meeting, y'all gotta listen to the Monday meeting. It's me and my brother, and it's just on audio, it's just on Apple, just on Spotify. And so every Monday at 5 a.m we drop this segment, and we like talking about real life stuff. Like, he is literally telling everybody how he's going through the process of bankruptcy from one of his businesses. And we just sharing and kikiing about it. Like, it's just because it's normal. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like I tried something. It didn't work out. It failed. Now I'm going to try something again, you know. And I think a lot of times in business, we have this, like, pride. But we also have this, like, shame and guilt. You know what I'm saying? Like, I remember the first time I made my first $1 million at 26. And I remember, like, okay, I made this money. But I kept investing it back in the business, right? And it was like, all right, I'm investing it in the business. But then I ain't put nothing aside for me. You know what I'm saying? Because when we think about our relationship with money, we think about, like, well, I done been a zero before, so what I'm scared of? Right. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, you like, I just bet the horse, you know? Right. But then you start to feel guilty because you like, dang, did I squander this? Did I do the wrong thing? Did God bless me with this? And now I done did the wrong thing, you know? So I think we have to kind of let go, especially when we have mentors, right? Like, let go of the shame, let go of the guilt, and be honest, because people can't help you on lies. You know what I'm saying? Right. So I think that's a beautiful thing you said. And so how have you developed mentors along the way in this journey? Do you still have mentors? And I know you are a mentor to more women.
I tell my mentees, don't follow people that's not having been where you're going. Mm-hmm. So as my career expanded and evolved, I had to, of course, get larger mentors that's done bigger things, what have you.
Yeah, I love that. So how do you choose the people that you are mentoring?
They usually just tend to gravitate towards me. It's mostly been millennials and Generation Z, Gen Z girls that's gravitating towards me. So I don't know if it's because I started at such a young age and they look at that or what have you. But far as choosing them and, you know, saying, okay, I'm going to work with you, I have to see, you know, their drive, what their goals are, and, you know, if they'll work, because, like, it's not going to work if you don't do the work.
Facts.
And then they say you scamming.
Ooh, girl, because they will say you are scamming because they are not doing the work. And that's the thing. My boyfriend always say, like, people come into your program and think you got like this, like, golden nugget, this magic pill, right? That's why they hop around from program to program, right? And they think they're gonna come over.
If you're over here on YouTube watching the podcast, listen, I need you to do me a favor. If you love me, do me this favor. Pull out your phone right now and go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify Podcasts or anywhere that you actually listen to podcasts at, right? I need you to subscribe and leave a review. Listen, the way podcasts work is the streets don't know we doing good if it's not on the audio version. The YouTube version don't really count, okay? So go over there, leave us a review, and let us know how much you love the podcast. Now back to the episode.
Yeah, Mishika, I heard you was helping the girls make seven figures, blah, blah, blah. And they come over there, they give you the money. And they like, okay, what I do? You like, okay, you gotta send the emails. You gotta do the work. Right. You gotta do. And they like, nah, see, that is not what I do. Now, I thought you had a shortcut to this. You know what I mean? And then the thing is, now you scamming. So how have you been able to kind of combat that? Or like even just make sure people understand that there's no way around, care what mentor, what, there's literally no way around the work.
Right. Well, initially when I do the intake, I let them know it's not going to work if you don't do the work.
Facts.
It's not a magic. I don't have no voodoo. I don't have nothing going on over here that's going to make you wake up and have the money in your account.
Yeah, yeah.
But you got to do the work.
Yeah.
You got to follow the blueprint.
You got to follow the blueprint, y'all. Listen, y'all out there, you got to do the work. If you're over here on YouTube watching the podcast, listen, I need you to do me a favor. If you love me, do me this favor. Pull out your phone right now and go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify Podcasts or anywhere that you actually listen to podcasts at, right? I need you to subscribe and leave a review. Listen, the way podcasts work is the streets don't know we doing good if it's not on the audio version. The YouTube version don't really count, okay? So go over there, leave us a review, and let us know how much you love the podcast. Now back to the episode. So listen, before we go, what is there anything that you would like to leave the audience with? Let them know what they should be doing to be able to combat this ghetto-ness of being a CEO.
Just be yourself. Be authentic. I find that when you don't be yourself and try to follow trends and everything, then you get caught up in a lot of hoopla. A lot of ghetto-ness and all of that. So just be your authentic self and your tribe will come to you.
Yes, I love it. Last question. What has been your biggest regret as a CEO?
My biggest regret, like I said in the beginning, trying to do everything myself. If I had got the team together and start worrying about, well, you have to worry about if you can trust them, but you can't, like, dig too deep in the stuff because you don't never know what you're getting anyway.
No.
You don't know until they start working for you. If I had done that sooner, I probably would have scaled sooner.
You gotta trust people, y'all. You gotta relinquish control sometimes so that you could be able to grow. I thank you guys for listening to another episode of the Ghetto CEO Podcast, where we talk about all things giving ghetto with being a CEO. Make sure you like, comment, and subscribe. Leave us a review and just keep watching the episodes. I don't know what else you would be doing. Just binge watch everything. I will see you guys later. Bye, y'all. Ghetto. Invoice in. Ghetto. Money spent. Oh, that's ghetto. Hold on. It's kind of ghetto being a CEO.